giving everybody an update. Justice Miller Lerman has now joined the court. So my question will be, is there anybody here on the first case of the day, Revise versus El Kasabi?
Looks
I
like
see
one.
Some new people here.
Looks
so
like both sides.
We will take the first case of the day. Justice Papik is recused in this matter. But if everybody's ready to go, we will take the first case of the day, which is, I'm going to pronounce it, Revise versus El Kasabi. And my apologies if I have butchered one or more of those names. Ms. Frost, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, for cutting us a break on the traffic matter. Nebraska winner, we should have all figured on that one, but there you have it. Good morning, members of the court. My name is Denise Frost. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Elena Revez. This case is, there's a lot going on in it, that's for sure. It is an appeal from an order of the Douglas County District Court finding that although a divorce decree was entered prematurely, and therefore, I would argue, without jurisdiction, nevertheless, the court elected to keep that order in full force and effect because an attack on it had not been mounted within 24 months under 42.346.
You count 60 days or 59 days?
60.
That's what the judge found, and you think it's 60 days also.
And Justice Hevekin, you raise an important point. Obviously, as you could tell from the briefs, this case reads like a law school problem in jurisdiction and civil procedure. As we went through this, certainly we found, along with some good guidance from the district court, on counting days and what the proper standard is. So yes, it's important to note that on appeal to this court, neither Ms. Revez nor Mr. El Kasabi have taken issue with the court's 60-day finding. There's no cross-appeal in this case, and of course, on behalf of the appellant, I don't object to the finding that it was 60 days.
So the counting was done excluding the day of service and then counting forward, and doing so, the stipulated hearing took place on the 60th day.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is correct. The case that the district court relied on in the 60-day counting, which I believe was the correct standard, is the Wymore versus Wymore case at 239 Nebraska 940. It's a case from 1992 where this court found, relying on precedent from 1929, that when a statute, specifically in this case a divorce statute, requires the passage of a certain number of days before the court can enter a decree, that is jurisdictional. That is jurisdictional. And the last day of the period must expire completely before the decree can be entered.
That was based on 42.363, right?
Correct.
That's not the basis that's argued in this case.
In this case, the decree was entered under 42.361, subsection 3. The parties submitted a waiver and a decree to the court without hearing. Of note, the decree and the waiver were both devoid of any representation by the parties that 60 days had passed. The parties did not voluntarily state in the decree or in the waiver that the court...
Why does that make a difference?
Well, I bring it up, Your Honor, only because under 42.346, the statute says, and it's a statute that dates from 1951, that it shall be conclusively presumed that the decree and all instruments and proceedings in connection therewith are valid in all respects, notwithstanding some defect or defects as may appear on the face of the record. For my own edification, I went back and looked at that decree again yesterday as I prepared. I know it certainly is a common practice for lawyers in family law cases. I do it. to have a representation in the decree that says...
You're not arguing that the face of the record means the four corners of the decree, are you?
Well, you know, Judge, I looked at...
It surely includes the other filings, which would include the return of service or the voluntary appearance, wouldn't it?
Certainly, yes, yes.
So the face of the record will show exactly what happened in this case, won't it?
It should.
All right.
It should. Inasmuch as I recognize that one of the missions of this court is to render an opinion that hopefully will elevate the standard of practice and give best practices guidance to counsel, I simply wanted to point that out. Some lawyers do it, some do not. In this case, there is no representation in the decree or stipulation by the parties that there is jurisdiction. And to be blunt, it doesn't really make any difference because, as this court is aware, if a trial court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, the parties can't confer jurisdiction on the court. They cannot. Not by acquiescence.
So your argument is the district court was wrong on the jurisdictional issue.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I think the district court's ruling sets up a conflict between 42-346, which is that two-year rule, and the long-established rule of this court, which is jurisdictional defects can be attacked at any time in any proceeding.
Can't the legislature, through the exercise of their power, change that rule? And didn't that statute, upon which the trial court relied, in effect, change that rule? 2 years goes by, it doesn't matter anymore.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I guess that's a question for this court to decide, because this court has said repeatedly, in fact, I could find no instance where this court has ever renounced the rule that a defect in jurisdiction can be attacked at any time in any proceeding.
What have we done in the adoption proceedings?
I beg your
pardon? In the adoption proceedings, what have we done in that situation?
In adoption proceedings, as I looked at those cases, now there is a statute with that two-year presumption of judicial finality, just as there is in Chapter 25. Generally, a statute that relates to this. Adoption, as I read those cases, adoption cases and paternity cases, as the court is no doubt aware from researching to prepare for this argument, that's where some of these questions have arisen. I've not seen anything specifically relating to the divorce statute, and specifically, I have not seen, and I cannot recall as I stand here today, any case in which someone sought to revoke or vacate a decree entered more than 2 years prior, where the request to vacate was based on the fact that there was no jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction is the issue here.
The facts surrounding the occurrence that took place, when service occurred and when the decree was entered, when the stipulated hearing occurred, those were all known to both sides, right?
There was no obfuscation.
Right. I mean, they may not have realized the significance of it, but they knew about it. They were, in effect, there at the time.
I think that is true. I mean, it isn't a case, for example, where one of the parties lived in a foreign country or something of that sort. It's not akin to a proceeding like that.
And if one is going to upset the finality of a divorce decree where both parties participated, years later, there are lots of potential consequences about remarriages, children, all sorts of potential things that the legislature may have been concerned about with that statute, aren't there?
There are. That's true. But I guess the question that's before you is, are you going to overturn virtually unchallenged precedent up to this point and say, well, even though we say an order entered without subject matter jurisdiction,
do we even have
void
to get to the jurisdictional issue if we interpret 361 as having a different standard than 363 as far as when is the first day you can enter that decree?
Well...
The 60th or after the 60th day?
I think, Your Honor, I don't know that there is a basis legally to make a distinction between the two. If you examine the statutory language, one of them says 60 days or more, and the other one says after 60 days.
You made the comment that parties can't confer jurisdiction. Is that equally true of a ruling by a court, which may or may not be erroneous, conferring or defeating jurisdiction?
I would contend that is so, Your Honor. I would contend that is so. And in fact, if I understand your question correctly, that is the Wymore case. In Wymore, as the court recalls, the decree was entered prematurely and there were errors in it. Then one of the parties came back and said, Judge, could you enter a nunc pro tunc and clean this up? The judge entered another order trying to correct. This court said, no, you cannot do that. If there was no jurisdiction to start with, you can't clean it up by going back in and amending that order. If jurisdiction doesn't exist, it doesn't exist. And that is the issue in this case. Either you go with the district court and you overrule precedent that has been in existence literally from the founding of this court relating to subject matter jurisdiction, or you continue it.
In the Wymore case, there had not been the 2 years expire, so the saving statute simply didn't apply, right?
In the Wymore case, in fact, Your Honor, as the court's aware, there was no analysis of the statute, which we now call 42.346. The statute was in existence at that time, but it was not analyzed by this court, so there's no knowing how it may have impacted. The Wymore case is decided strictly on subject matter jurisdiction grounds, not personal jurisdiction, but subject matter jurisdiction, the special ability of the court to enter an order after a specific period of time has passed.
But refresh my recollection, wasn't the Wymore case essentially a direct appeal from the original proceedings?
It was.
And so nowhere near 2 years had expired since the time of the decree that was found to be without jurisdiction.
That's correct. That's correct. That is so.
Yeah.
That is
okay.
So. And it is specifically subject matter jurisdiction at issue in that case. In my brief, I did cite some cases where courts went back in on a declaratory judgment basis as much as 8 years later and amended the terms of a decree. And so, but subject matter jurisdiction, for example, in the Berman case, that was not raised as an issue. I see my time has expired. Thank you. I ask you to reverse the Douglas County District.
Thank you very much. Ms. Trent Villam, good morning to you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Kathy Trent Villam, and I represent the appellee in this matter, Mr. El Kassaby. There are really two issues for the court, and really only one issue that goes, one issue I think the court has to decide, and that goes to the question that Justice Hevekin raised, and that is the question of whether or not we even need to get to the issue of subject matter jurisdiction. And that question turns on an interpretation of the statute. And as much as the appellant would like to treat the two statutes as one and the same, there's very much a difference in the language, and that difference does dictate a different result.
Don't both statutes use the words days and the word after?
No, Your Honor. The statute in this case says 60 days or more. The court may enter an order 60 days or more after service. The other statute says on or at 60 days or more. The other statute says after 60 days. And so that's how you get to the result in Wymore. What Wymore basically found is that when the court says after 60 days, or the statute says after 60 days, that 60th day has to come to a completion. So in all intents and purposes, you can't enter the order until the 61st day. The statute that we're dealing with says 60 days or more.
The words 60, the word days, and the word after appear in both statutes, right?
The relevant language, Your Honor, is 60 days or more after service of process, yes.
They're just, aren't they just rearranged? I mean, the or more is different from at least, but how is that substantively different?
It's substantively different because it allows the entry of the order on the 60th day. Whereas if the statute requires that 60 days have fully passed, then you get to the 61st day. I understand that both statutes use 60 days, and it would certainly make sense from a common sense standpoint to treat the statutes the same. But the legislature used different terminology, and this court has said where the legislature's language is plain and clear on its face, the statute has to be interpreted and applied as written. And in this case, the statute says 60 days or more.
After
service of process. So when you start the 60-day counting process, as the trial court found, you start on the day after service of process, you count 60 days, that 60th day under our statute becomes the date on which the order can be entered.
So are you focusing then on the inclusion of the term until in 42363? Is that until 60 days after significant to our analysis? And does until appear in both statutes?
The until language, until and after, I think, are the two relevant terms in that statute, because the until and the after require that the 60th day completely expire before the court can have a hearing.
Or at least that's how we interpreted it in Wymore.
That is how you interpreted it in Wymore. And I do want to talk about Wymore.
And you talked about common sense a minute ago. Is there a reason why it might make a difference if you're doing essentially a stipulated divorce and you don't have to have a hearing? Is there a reason why we might treat that differently than we did in Wymore? It's a different statute.
Yes. Absolutely, Your Honor. The answer to that question is yes, because you are dealing with a consent decree based on pleadings that, in this case, two lawyers have both agreed to, have filed, have entered voluntary appearances.
What's the purpose of the 60-day limit to begin with?
They call it a cooling-off period, Your Honor, and it's a very common thing. Interestingly,
doesn't that mean that's an opportunity for the parties to change their minds and not get divorced?
Absolutely.
Doesn't it make sense from a policy standpoint that the legislature would apply the same cooling-off period to whether there's a trial or whether there's a stipulated disposition?
Actually, Your Honor, in this case, if you look at the legislative history, the senator who proposed the legislation actually contemplated and initially planned to allow the 60-day period to be completely waived by the parties in the instance of a consent decree, the idea being that at this point in time, both parties agree that the marriage is irretrievably broken, there's really no point to having a cooling off period.
But that's not the language.
That's
that
not
was
the
adopted.
Language, but that was ultimately a compromise based on a request by the Bar Association to retain a cooling off period. So going back to your question, Mr. Chief Justice,
so
it
is
different.
They compromised on 59 days?
No, they allowed for the order to be entered on the 60th day, which is the difference, as opposed
because
to.
Because we have interpreted 363 to essentially say you can't have a hearing until the 61st day.
Exactly. On the basis of the plain language of the statute, the trial court's decision should be affirmed. If the court decides it needs to reach the jurisdictional issue, I think one of the issues or one of the things that this court needs to reevaluate is the Wymore decision and the extent to which Wymore treats the 60-day cooling-off period as necessary to confer subject matter jurisdiction. When you look at subject matter jurisdiction, usually what you are talking about is the general powers afforded to the court. Can the court decide the general subject matter? And in this case, there's no question that the district court has subject matter jurisdiction over divorce issues. That's simply clear. And in fact, the statutes were amended to allow the county court to exercise jurisdiction in certain circumstances. So then the question becomes, does the 60-day cooling off period or the court's exercise of jurisdiction before that 60-day period somehow deprive the court of jurisdiction? And in that context, this is really not a jurisdictional question. The court retains its jurisdiction.
It's not a subject matter jurisdiction.
It's not an issue of subject matter jurisdiction. It becomes an abuse of the exercise of jurisdiction.
So does that logically lead to the premise that trial judges can simply ignore the 60 days?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because the difference, Your Honor, is that if the court inappropriately exercises its jurisdiction, that decree becomes voidable. The difference is if you treat it as an issue of subject matter jurisdiction, and you, Justice Castle, raised this very issue, if you treat it as an issue of subject matter jurisdiction and hold that the court lacked any jurisdiction with regard to that case, which is essentially what saying the court had no subject matter jurisdiction does, then you treat the order as void, and that can always be subject to a collateral attack. And clearly the legislature did not want that to be the case based on its passage of 42.346. The court can reconcile 42.346.
But that statute predates and hasn't been amended, has it, since the Divorce Act in the late 1970s. I mean, that statute came along long before our current divorce statutes, right?
Sure.
So I'm not sure how that, I'm not following your argument. Help me out.
Sure. My argument is that 42.346 says that after 2 years, the order is conclusively presumed to be valid in all respects if it hasn't been challenged. If you treat the issue of an erroneous exercise of jurisdiction as depriving the court of subject matter jurisdiction, then for all intents and purposes, you are throwing that statute out the window, because the statute can always, or the order can always be subject to challenge collaterally if it's deemed void.
You're in effect conceding your opponent's argument that statute, the 346, cannot overcome a subject matter jurisdictional defect.
I think based on the case law in generally, it doesn't overcome it because it's not a subject matter jurisdiction issue where the court exercises its jurisdiction.
Can I go back to the? I think we're still dwelling on a hypothetical, but if way early, let's call it 55 days, the court were to enter a decree, how would you describe that exercise of authority?
It would be an abuse of the court's exercise. In the same way that if the court enters an order and
awards child... So would that be, in your view, then that would be voidable, not merely void?
It would be voidable, and then it would be subject to the 2-year limitations period. So if the court enters the order on day 55 and somebody wants to come back and challenge, they have 2 years to do so.
So in that hypothetical, and I know it's exaggerated, but would that be the court creating jurisdiction?
No, because the court had jurisdiction under the general
statute. On the subject matter.
On the subject matter jurisdiction, the court had subject matter jurisdiction through the statutes that confer it on the district court.
Doesn't the logical extent of that argument simply take away the cooling off period? As long as nobody objects and the judge will do it, you could have the decree entered the same day that process is served or a voluntary appearance is entered.
No, Your Honor, because the courts are still obligated to follow it in the same way that they're still obligated to include the worksheet. And this court has said that if you
but
don't
But if nobody appeals, you're saying even within the 2 years, nobody appeals, the courts can just disregard that. Isn't that the logical extent of where you're headed?
In theory, yes, but I think that is assuming a certain action on the trial courts, that the trial courts aren't otherwise going to respect the 60-day cooling off period. And the approach that I'm proposing is certainly consistent with how other courts have treated this issue. Restatement Second of Judgments, Section 11, specifically talks about the difference between a court being deprived of subject matter jurisdiction and an erroneous exercise of jurisdiction. There's a case, Wood v. White, 558 P. 2nd, 1289. That's an Oregon appellate court. Again, the same issue, Your Honor, where the court exercised jurisdiction before the cooling off period.
How does legislative acquiescence enter into this analysis? Our Wymore decision's been there for a long time. It's been more than 25 years. I mean, it's been there the whole time I've been a judge, which is almost 28 years. Mm-hmm. So if they disagreed with our Wymore opinion, they've had a long time to change the statute, and they haven't done it, have they?
Well, Wymore is based on a different statute, Your Honor.
It's based on 363, and that hasn't changed, has it?
Well, no, but again, that's the statute where until after 60 days have passed. So in that sense, the court, the legislature hasn't acquiesced in the court's interpretation.
So essentially, that argument now depends on the difference between the statutes. You're contending one is the 60th day is okay, 59th isn't, under the current statute that's the subject of this case, although the other statute is still there and says it has to be 61 or more, at least the way we've interpreted Wymore.
Right, because on the one hand, it's 60 or more days versus until after 60 days.
361 was amended after Wymore, was it not?
I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head.
Sure. I mean, yes, certainly it was. That's when the Bar Association, the legislative history that you talked about.
Right.
That all came about long after Wymore.
Yes, that is true.
Okay.
And that is when they talked about waiving the entire period.
Doesn't the lack of finality, as being argued here, pose a whole slew of potential problems, such as if this was brought up 20 years from now and someone passed away and a subsequent spouse now it loses out on inheritance or life insurance or other benefits?
Absolutely. And again, I think that's how you can reconcile the plain language of the statute, which directs that the order in this case was proper because it was entered on the 60th day. But even if the court disagrees, you can still preserve the finality if you find that Wymore was incorrect in holding that it was something that deprived the court of subject matter jurisdiction, as opposed to simply being an abuse of the court's exercise of its jurisdiction.
Does that mean that if we are unwilling to overrule Wymore, that you lose?
No, because the court, because we still get back to the first issue, which is a statutory interpretation, and the order was entered on the 60th day, and the statute allows for the on day 60.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will go on then to the what was initially scheduled as the third case of the day, which is County of Cedar, Nebraska versus Thielen. Justice Papik will rejoin the court, has rejoined the court.